call the Senate Housing and Homelessness Prevention Committee to order. We do have a quorum present for the record. So good afternoon, members. We today are going to hear the zoning package of bills that we have been working on throughout session. And this bill will then go on to state and local government. Senator Port, we will dive right into your bill. So the next item on our agenda is Senator Port's bill, Senate File 1370. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Bolden. Members, first I would like to say I have the A3, which is the delete all that has been posted and that you have been looking at. But before we adopt that, I'd like to move the A11.
Very good. So Senator Port has, as mentioned, has the A3, but first we will adopt the A11 as an amendment to that amendment.
And I can quickly walk through that if you'd like.
Very good. Thank you. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Bolden. Members, for the A11, this is just some sort of clarifying fixes. Lines 1 through 3 through 1 through 4. 1.4 specifies that when a municipality is denying a project due to infrastructure capacity issues or similar, that the public works director or a similarly qualified person must provide that reason in writing. 1.5 is clarifying language so requirements don't impede residential building. 1.6 to 1.8 adds clarifying language to ensure that cities allow missing middle developments and limit restrictions to those that impact public health, safety, and general welfare only. 1.9 to 1.13 relates to alternative density plannings and is a more practical way to implement that than what was in the original A3. And 1.4 to 1.28 amends the title. This is just a technical change.
Very good, members. So we will vote on the A11 amendment to the A3. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? All right. The amendment is adopted. And now to the underlying A3 amendment.
Yes. And Madam Chair, this is an author's amendment to this bill. I'll go through it sort of piece by piece in a few moments, but if we can adopt the amendment so we all know what we're looking at, that would be great.
Very good. So members, to the A3, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? All right. The A3 is adopted. So Chair Port, to your bill as amended.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Bolden and members. Zoning reform is essential to addressing Minnesota's housing crisis. However, before we begin discussing the specifics of this bill, I just want to take a moment to remind the committee of the deep housing needs that every community in our state is currently facing and why this issue is so important. Over the summer and at the start of the session, we received several reports on the state of housing in Minnesota, which revealed that fully half of all renters are currently cost-burdened for rent, and a quarter of renters pay over 50% of their income on housing costs. It's important that we keep in mind what this means for renters and homeowners of our state. For families, every extra dollar spent on high housing costs means that less is available for food, healthcare, school supplies, transportation, and every other essential need that families face. In the last several years, family homelessness has increased to historic highs in our state as well. More than 8,000 Minnesotans face homelessness on any given night, and an increasing number of that population are seniors and families with children. Minnesota is short over 100,000 units of housing, and some of the greatest concentration of missing middle homes are houses which are affordable for our state's lowest income renters. We've heard from testifiers this year on exactly how disastrous the current housing crisis is for families, and especially for families with young children, all of whom should be in the front of our minds as we continue to work on important bills this session. All evidence has shown that lack of affordability is a key driver for homelessness, housing instability, and lack of growth for smaller cities and towns. When our committee toured the state earlier this summer, we heard stories of working families in greater Minnesota cities living in unsheltered homelessness, often in their cars, not just because they couldn't find affordable housing, but because there wasn't enough market rate housing available in their communities to support their jobs. Opening the door to more construction of all types of housing will have enormous benefits for renters, and home buyers everywhere, as well as for small cities that are looking to grow. Finally, it's critical that any housing solution recognizes the racial homeownership disparities in our state are some of the worst in the nation and are currently worse than they were in the 1950s. We invested heavily last year in finding new pathways to homeownership for first-generation homebuyers, and an essential step in solving these disparities is ensuring that there are abundant and attractive options available in every community that families can afford. Last night, as I was driving home from work, I was listening to a podcast, the Daily Podcast, about a New York Times story where there's an area of land in Northern California that has sort of been bought up with the idea to build a new town with missing middle housing, with walkable districts, with that kind of community where you can have a grocery store on the corner and walk to the park where your kid goes and be able to go to your school, and you'll have neighbors around you who are doing all of those other things. Something that looks very different than our suburbs here. And when asked about, like, this is going to be so complicated and complex to do this, the answer that the people leading this gave was, it is easier to build an entire town than it is to build one duplex. That's insanity. We have to remove barriers to build the kind of housing that our communities want, that our communities need, that can offer affordable homeownership options, that can offer renting options, that can build the kind of connection in our communities that people are thriving for. And we've seen other states facing similar housing shortages take action. It's Minnesota's turn to enact effective and overdue zoning reform. What these changes will look like in the end is still being discussed, and this committee has been working consistently this year with housing advocates of all backgrounds, as well as directly with cities and other organizations to try to address concerns that some groups have with this bill. This important work to include the voices of all communities will continue as this bill moves forward. And as we have these discussions, I hope that we can keep central in the mission of our committee and in our mind, making housing more affordable and available for every family in our state. And I can do a quick walkthrough of the A3 for folks. As you're looking through it, Section 1 adds a timeline deadline for response. It requires a municipality to approve or deny a building permit within 60 days. That's Sections 1 and 2. Section 3 relates to a cost per square footage valuation for residential properties, something we are continuing to work on to find the right mechanism to have a more standard building permit fees. Sections 4 and 5 relate to emergency shelters. Section 4 is about counties, and Section 5 is about cities. Section 6 is about the multifamily residential developments, and that goes through the subdivisions. This is Senator Paz's version of the bill that we heard last week. Section 7 is about the residential densities. Subdivision 1 defines the terms. Subdivision 2 requires a city to authorize missing middle housing. Subdivision 3 is about density in cities of the first class. Subdivision 4 is about densities of cities in the second, third, fourth class, or towns. Subdivision 5 allows cities to impose conditions to protect public health, safety, and general welfare. Subdivision 6 is about ADUs. Subdivision 7 is about minimum lot sizes. Subdivision 8 discusses off-street parking. Subdivision 9 is about protecting affordability and affordable housing. And I want to call out Senator Dietzick and Senator Mohammed, who have great interest in this area and have been working with me on that. Subdivision 10 is about alternative density plans for cities that are already demonstrating this sort of work. Subdivision 11 protects floodplains. Subdivision 12 ensures that this entire section relates and is required to follow state building and fire codes. Section 9 is about limiting or that municipalities are not allowed to require a homeowners association in order to build a development. And Section 10 is the effective date. And then, Madam Chair, I have a list of testifiers.
Very good. Thank you, Chair Port. We will move to testimony. First will be Peter Coyle. After that, via Zoom, we will hear from Sharon Hansen. Mr. Coyle, as you're ready, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Senator, Chair Bolden, and members of the committee. My name is Peter Coyle. I'm a lawyer lobbyist with Larkin Hoffman, and I'm legislative counsel to Housing First Minnesota, which is one of the advocates for the proposed legislation that's here tonight, today before you. First of all, I want to thank Senator Port and this committee for the hard work that you've put into crafting a policy that's addressing a very important state policy, which is access and affordability of housing of all types throughout the state of Minnesota. We strongly support the amendment as it's been adopted by the committee, because we think it helps advance that cause.
Mr. Coyle, could you talk a little closer to your microphone, please? Thank you.
It's my mild-mannered personality that's carrying me here, Madam Chair. I'll just restate that Housing First Minnesota supports the work of this committee, supports the adopted amendment that's put forward as the A3, and we encourage the committee's further consideration of it as it works through the process. Thank you very much for the chance to testify today, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your testimony. I should have mentioned at the outset, because of the number of testifiers we have, and we want to hear from everyone, and we also want to have time for questions and discussion, we will be asking testifiers to limit your testimony to 2 minutes. We will have a timer, so when you hear the timer go off, please conclude your thoughts. Next, we will move to Sharon Hansen. After that will be Evan Roberts.
Madam Chair Bolden, can you hear me okay?
We can. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you. My name is Sharon Hansen, City Administrator for Marshall, a small city with just over 13,000 residents located in Southwest Minnesota. I'm also a board member for the Coalition Greater Minnesota Cities and the League of Minnesota Cities. We agree with the need for more housing in Minnesota. The City of Marshall has done its best to provide for affordable housing by partnering with our local community action agency, partnering with our four-year university, Southwest State University, on affordable student housing, and offering city-owned lots for sale that are far below market value. We currently have these lots available, and they have largely been, housing construction has largely been sluggish due to the economics of increased construction costs, and most recently, interest rate pressures. In addition to affordable lots, the City of Marshall has largely eliminated aesthetics requirements, and we also allow multifamily development in all of our residential areas. And we have done this through our own local process, thus giving our own residents a voice. We have concerns about limiting parking to one spot per unit. We do have transit, but it is limited. We still need the ability for our residents to drive to where they need to go. It's a largely rural area, and that would be a hindrance for us here at the city. In addition, we are very appreciative of the legislature providing housing aid in 23 and 24. We will soon be working with our community action agency to further affordable housing in the city. And then finally, we believe that locally we can make affordable housing happen. St. Paul has done this, Richfield has done this. City of Marshall has made changes without legislative intervention. And also, neighborhoods are formed within cities when there's like property in an area. If different uses are allowed in an area, we will lose our sense of place and belonging. And we feel that residents will migrate to other communities in other states where they can have a say through their local zoning process and elected officials. Thank you, Madam Chair, for your willingness to hear our thoughts here in Marshall and from small cities. And we hope we can continue to work with you on finding solutions for affordable housing.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we'll hear from Evan Roberts. After that, Ania McDonnell.
Okay. Hello. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you. My name's Evan Roberts. I'm a demographer, and I've taught urban history and sociology at the University of Minnesota since 2010. My testimony is informed by my work, but doesn't represent an official position of the university. As part of collaborative efforts to develop a national zoning atlas, I've reviewed over 100 Twin Cities area zoning codes, and I'm working to expand this to cover the majority of Minnesota's population. Like most other states, the legislature has ceded its land use authority to cities. In theory, sending policy to the local level provides space for innovation. In housing, it has not. City policies individually have created a situation in the aggregate where we are short 100,000 units of housing all over the state in all forms. And it's part of the proper functioning of state government to stabilize the housing market and enable innovation so Minnesotans can find a place to live. The DE before you today creates some basic standards about what cities must do from a land use perspective, in the same way that the state reasonably sets building codes for the health and safety of the population. Nearly all cities in Minnesota have legalized just two types of housing: single family homes on large lots, as large as 10,000 square feet or bigger, and apartments which are mostly located on busy roads or highways. There's some exceptions to this, such as townhomes and planned unit developments, but they're the exception, not the norm, and don't represent the broad array of housing types that we'd see if more were legalized. There's desirable housing types that are physically possible to build, such as putting 3 to 6 family-sized homes in one building, or putting a one-bedroom unit in an underused backyard for aging parents to move into, an ADU, or replacing an older dwelling with a couple of townhomes. But we really don't see these being built or enabled by most Minnesota cities, and the result is we've limited the options for the types of housing that Minnesota families can build or buy. This bill changes that reality. SF 1370 allows more choices in the kinds of housing we can build across the state, seeks to stabilize homeownership and rental costs by limiting exclusionary requirements that differ across cities, such as roof height or parking spaces or setbacks, that make it difficult to easily and more affordably replicate designs across different cities. It'll help the state meet the challenge of building 100,000 units of housing and meet the increase in the Twin Cities population of 700,000 people over the next 25 years, which is what is projected by the Metropolitan Council and other agencies, including the Census Bureau. Thank you for your time, and thank you for your support of this game-changing bill for Minnesota and for Minnesota families.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we'll hear from Ania McDonnell. After that, Amal Dixit.
Chair Port and members, my name's Ania McDonnell, and I'm a government relations specialist with Metro Cities. Metro Cities represents cities in the 7-county metropolitan area. We appreciate the opportunity to comment today and our discussions with the chair on language in this bill. Metro Cities respectfully but strongly opposes Senate File 1370 as amended, which broadly preempts city zoning and land use authorities through various provisions throughout the legislation. In your packets is a joint letter from the city associations detailing several significant concerns with the bill. To serve their local citizens and communities, city officials consider and make decisions with respect to local land uses in a manner that works to balance existing and future uses, compatibility of uses, physical and fiscal constraints, and local input. Local land use authority is a fundamental authority that recognizes local elected officials are in the best position to make these decisions. To ensure the adequate and efficient provision of regional and local sewer, roads, water, and other infrastructure, cities in the 7-county region are required by the statutory Metropolitan Land Use Planning Act to meet density requirements, to plan for existing and future land uses, and to guide sufficient land for affordable housing. Metro Cities has significant concerns in that the bill removes the local decision-making on residential development in individual communities and the implications for ensuring the local public safety, health, and welfare of local communities. This bill mandates local density through state law with no mechanisms to pay for or for a city to reasonably plan for increasing capacity to support that density. We look forward to working with the author and the committee as this bill moves forward. And with me, I have Jill Huttmacher from the city of Eagan, who will provide comments as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. McDonnell. Next, we will hear from Mr. Dixit. After that, Jill Huttmacher. Please introduce yourself when you are ready and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Bolden, committee members. My name is Amol Dixit with Solheim Companies, a multifamily housing developer in the Twin Cities. Thank you for this opportunity to provide testimony. I'm here to make the case for buy right development. Solheim recently brought forward a fully funded workforce housing project in the West Metro that was in line with that municipality's comprehensive plan guidance and its housing goals. But since zoning policy in this municipality has not been updated to align with the comprehensive plan, the door was left open for a small area plan, which City Council authorized at the request of a vocal minority of residents. In reviewing and ultimately killing this project, City Council cited their commitment to completing the small area plan process before considering our project, even though the small area plan was authorized months after our project had been submitted for funding applications. Furthermore, when we originally brought forward a market rate development for this site 3 years ago, there was no call for a small area plan. It was only after we pivoted to a workforce housing development that the neighboring community created a petition calling for this small area plan. This was more than 1.5 years after we had originally engaged the city on this site. Zoning policy that is not aligned with comprehensive plans creates complicated loopholes that contribute to projects being politicized, leading to delays or, in this case, the death of a project. When this happens, housing production becomes expensive and risky. Less housing is built, it takes longer to bring housing to market, and the possibility of quality housing for more people diminishes. These issues are not unique to our project or to this municipality. In fact, this occurs across Minnesota, across America, in towns and cities every day. This was a missed opportunity to bring much-needed workforce housing to the West Metro. This bill is an opportunity to bring clarity and consistency to zoning codes across the state. We look forward to working with the committee to advance this important bill. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Next will be Jill Huttmacher. After that, Jeff Archer, you are welcome to come forward as well. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair and members, my name is Jill Huttmacher, and I am the Director of Community Development in the City of Eagan. I am testifying today on behalf of the League of Minnesota Cities, Metro Cities, and the Municipal Legislative Commission, which together represents cities across the state, including the City of Eagan. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today on Senate File 1370. This legislation represents highly consequential changes and preemptions to city zoning and land use authority and would eliminate public input in the residential development process. The bill as drafted impacts the ability of cities to plan physically and fiscally for public infrastructure. The bill hinders our city's ability to respond to local conditions and to welcome engagement through robust community input. The joint city letter outlines significant administrative and functional challenges for how cities operate to ensure the health, safety, and welfare of residents. Despite being a developed city, Eagan has added 2,100 housing units over the last 10 years. 400 of these are either subsidized or naturally occurring affordable units. Additional 350 units are approved, and nearly 500 are in a state-mandated environmental review. This evening, after a year-long planning process, the Eagan City Council will consider the final draft of a small area plan for former office properties surrounding Eagan Central Park. The planning process included extensive public engagement, with over 1,400 residents responding to digital surveys or attending in-person events. The draft plan contemplates approximately 1,000 new residential units in a wide variety of housing types and densities within walkable, connected neighborhoods in proximity to transit and services. The City of Eagan upholds this planning process an example of the best of local land use decision making: transparent, inclusive, thoughtful, and orderly. Thank you, Chair Porton members, for your time today. We look forward to continuing to work with the committee on advancing a strong state and local partnership on these issues as this legislation is further considered.
Thank you for your testimony. I'll also just take this opportunity to issue a blanket apology for all of the names I'm mispronouncing today. Next, we will hear from James Archer. After that, Margaret Kaplan. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Hi, James Archer. Matrix Development. I'm an affordable housing developer. I just wanted to come and speak in support of these changes. I mean, I personally see this as being a game changer if this becomes law. being in real estate for 20 years and getting into affordable housing development in the past 5 years, I see the challenges that are in play with acquiring land, going through entitlements. There's just a lot to it, and being able to have this type of flexibility, it's of course never gonna get totally built out, but it will take strain off of the supply side of land, which is something that I come across. You see, you know, commercially zoned districts, industrial zoned districts, and you know, it's sitting there with great access to, you know, things in the community and highways and such. And I just want to say that this would be a big help for people that want to produce more housing, more affordable housing, housing with services. You know, it's going to have an impact of bringing the cost to build new housing down and bring rents with it down and everything, all the other good things that come with it. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Margaret Kaplan, after that, we'll hear from Elizabeth Weffel. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Senator Bolden, members of the committee. My name is Margaret Kaplan, and I'm the president of the Housing Justice Center, and I'm here to speak in support of Senate File 1370 as amended. I'm here because I care about fair housing, safe, stable, dignified, and deeply affordable places for people to call home free from discriminatory barriers. I've spent the last 20 years of my career seeing great affordable housing development getting killed due to NIMBY forces, even as communities time and again say they want and need affordable housing. There are some cities doing a great job, and we've heard some examples of that, but there are plenty of places where the door is really closed. People don't even start the conversation. Because of the way zoning currently exists in Minnesota, we have to fight site by site and project by project to make things happen, not just in the metro area, but across the state. And we use the tools we have at our disposal, largely because we're a legal organization, we use civil rights laws. But this is a long and arduous process and causes delay and expense for the development and adversarial relationships within communities, and most importantly, the lost opportunity for years for families who need great affordable places to live and thrive. Promises and commitments to development and density and comprehensive plans can become just words on a page if the zoning isn't aligned, and I fear that sometimes there was never any intention of creating a community of inclusion. That's why some cities don't get those kinds of development proposals, because folks know the answer is no. In the Housing Cost Challenge report that HJC did about a decade ago, we identified some of the drivers of the high cost of developing deeply affordable housing. And this includes things like time, uncertainty, delay, arbitrary aesthetic design standards, and reduction of density between the planning and the construction in order to placate NIMBYism. I see this bill has some really important components in order to meet affordability, including density bonuses and replacement of affordable housing. It won't solve all of our housing problems or all of our housing affordability issues. No one thing can. And I don't love everything in this bill and wish it did a lot more for affordable housing, but it's an essential first step towards ensuring that fair housing choice exists in communities across the state. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next testifier will be Elizabeth Weffel. After that, Ellie Skelton. You're welcome to come forward as well. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Elizabeth Weffel, and I'm here on behalf of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. I want to thank you for allowing me to testify today. We want to heap thanks and praise on Senator Port for her work on housing in Greater Minnesota and her efforts to address our concerns in this bill. We've seen some really important changes, including extending the applicability of these zoning changes to townships and working on solutions for our concerns about infrastructure mismatch. However, our members continue to have concerns with this bill and continue to proposed as currently drafted. A major challenge in amending this bill has been that the initial bill was aimed primarily at the problems of and solutions for major metropolitan areas where developable land is lacking and transit is abundant. The solutions in this bill don't address the primary challenge Greater Minnesota faces, which is market failure. With that in mind, I want to highlight a few outstanding concerns. Most of our cities believe that the minimum lot sizes are needlessly small for our communities, especially if we are trying to increase density on those same properties. The parking restrictions don't don't make a lot of sense when our communities lack the robust transit needed to make those restrictions work. Although some of our cities have transits, as Sharon Hansen pointed out, our people still need to drive many places. Pushing parking to the street or making it the city's responsibility creates problems for snow plowing, public safety, and more. We also believe that if you're going to be imposing aesthetic restrictions, they should be extended to the HOAs, which is where most of those restrictions occur in Greater Minnesota. There are additional portions of the bill that require more clarity, such as whether and how municipal standards apply to ADUs, but we think all of that can be resolved. Finally, I want to step back and point to our members' most fundamental concern. The upzoning and other restrictions in this bill, many feel, usurp local democracy, taking away the decision-making ability of local governments to address the specific challenges and opportunities they face. At the end of the day, we all share the goal of increasing housing affordably and in an environmentally responsible manner. We hope to continue working with Chair Port, this committee, and others to ensure that this happens in Greater Minnesota.
Thank you for your testimony. Next testifier is Ellie Skelton. After that will be Paul Egger.
Good afternoon, Chair Bolden and committee members. I extend my gratitude for the opportunity to address you today to express my support of the amended Senate File 1370. My name is Ellie Skelton. I'm the Executive Director at Touchstone Mental Health. I've been there since 2007, and I've worked in the behavioral health field for 30 years. Research has shown that a stable home is an important component for recovery for individuals with a diagnosis of mental illness. It's not uncommon for individuals with serious and persistent mental illness to face difficulty finding safe, affordable housing in a neighborhood of their choice. Many live below the poverty level and cannot afford fair market rent. That's why I applaud last session's historic investment in affordable housing funding in Minnesota. During my career, I have been involved in many supportive housing and treatment program zoning and community meetings. We have never been welcomed in a community. We always have opposition with some level of neighborhood opposition. We also have supporters. At these meetings, I attempt to be calm, answer all questions, provide reassurance. I'm often yelled at. They follow me to the parking lot. All questions, unfortunately, many times it's discriminatory that people don't understand, people with a mental illness or people living in poverty. Sometimes this discriminatory is blatant. Other times it is very subtle. In my experience, attempt to calm these fears with logical arguments often fall short. Despite assurances about property values, crime rates, adamant opponents remained unconvinced. When people are operating from a place of fear and stigma, it is hard to find middle ground. This highlights the necessity of this legislation to protect against discriminatory attitudes and behaviors. When neighborhood opposition is loud and well-funded, this is when I've seen our projects killed by zoning, other concerns, small area plans, sewer, you know, things that don't seem discriminatory in nature, but fundamentally are. Drawing parallels with historic injustices such as redlining and discriminatory housing policies, we see systemic biases have perpetrated economic and racial segregation. Today, similar prejudices embedded in local zoning and planning laws continue to foster division and hinder progress. Local governments are ill-equipped to address these systemic issues. This necessitates state-level interventions. That's why I support this legislation, and thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. And our last testifier, Paul Egger, please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Paul Egger. I'm Senior Vice President of Governmental Affairs for the Minnesota Realtors Association. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of this legislation today. We think it represents a positive step forward in addressing the housing supply challenges that we face as a state, which will then also, by increasing supply, address positively affordability and allow more Minnesotans to become homeowners. We are supportive of this bill because our members are out every day trying to help more Minnesotans buy a home, buy their first home, buy their next home. And the demand is there, and the supply is inadequate to meet that demand. This bill will provide additional options, will provide additional choices for housing, and we really look forward to working with you to realize the potential to create more homeownership opportunities moving forward. I also do want to flag one concern, though, that we have with the language, and that addresses the provision that the Chair Port mentioned earlier regarding the affordable housing replacement language in Section 7, Subdivision 9 on page 10 of the amendment. As we read this language, it would apply to homeowners who are not owners of subsidized property, but owners of property that would meet the affordability criteria in the bill, and would prevent them from remodeling or demolishing their property and rebuilding. And we think that is just a fundamental property right, the ability to control what you do with your property. And we look forward to additional discussion with you as the bill moves forward, because we do see that as a big problem in language. But with that, we really are excited about this legislation. We're excited to work with legislators from both sides of the aisle to increase the supply of housing in Minnesota and make some significant leaps forward in affordability and get more people into home ownership. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you to all the testifiers. Chair Port, any comments before we move to questions and discussion?
Thank you, Chair Bolden. I just want to thank all of the testifiers and say, you know, in particular to Mr. Eggers' concerns, we are still working on that affordability provision. All of this bill, we are still working on and still having discussions on, and we encourage folks to continue reaching out to us to make this language stronger. I do want to raise that, like, I don't believe this bill is a silver bullet, right? This is not going to solve our housing crisis with one thing. We need continued investment. We need continued programs that actually meet the needs of our communities. What this bill does is it removes barriers to creating housing across the state. And I know the argument is that cities can already do that, and they are already doing that. And I guess my question there is, then why are we at this point? We are 100,000 housing units short. These barriers are existing, and we do have in the bill subdivision 10, which we're happy to continue working on, that gives cities an option if they are already creating this kind of housing or increasing density in a different way that fits their community, then they can submit that plan and they can not have to follow this bill. We are open to other solutions, but we haven't been offered them. We are in this place because these barriers exist and they have stopped housing from being created in our communities. So happy to have everybody at the table, but also, like, this is a crisis that we need to move on.
All right, members, discussion. I will keep a list. Senator Dreheim.
Thank you, Chair Bolden. My question was to the previous testifier, which I think is fine. So my understanding is the realtors have a concern about property rights on having a blanket provision. And I know, Senator Port, in a different section, you refer to a deed restriction. So couldn't we use that same type of language in this part if there is housing that is subsidized, that we could have the option of that nonprofit or housing provider to put a deed restriction on that, and then that's more of a intended use when it's funded up front instead of a blanket? Because I have sold many homes that have been torn down past their useful life, and normally that helps clean up a neighborhood when you see people making improvements, and it kind of goes against my pathway to home ownership. So I hope we can work on getting some kind of comfort language in that section. So that's all I wanted to say at that time. Thank you.
Senator Port, any follow-up?
Thank you, Chair Bolden and Senator Dreheim. Absolutely, we are continuing to work on this language. I think there needs to be some call out about blighted properties. We're looking at deed restrictions. We're looking at other things like that. And I think this is one of the places to call out that it is very clear that there are differences in greater Minnesota than there are in the metro area, where we need to look at what those communities need individually, as well as at a whole, and make sure that we get this language right to make sure that it is protecting, you know, communities of color who have been targeted to buy up properties in their communities to flip them and gentrify neighborhoods. That is what we're trying to get at with this, and to maintain affordability that exists in communities. not preventing people from upgrading their own homes or, you know, doing those necessary pieces that happen and creating that workforce housing that's necessary in Greater Minnesota. So ongoing process, and appreciate any language that people have to get us down the right path. Senator Lucero.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I very much appreciate this conversation, this bill, the slew of bills that have been considered so far this session, the slew of ideas that haven't yet been put into bill form, that many different voices, many different stakeholders within my community and across the state, and members of this committee that continue to add. They're all very valuable. And again, I very much appreciate it. As I think back on my own experience, it is a very true statement in recognition that each of us is pursuing happiness. And happiness is defined by each of us differently. And some of us want to rent, some of us want to own, many want to own. And as I think back on my own experience, there are many common milestones in life. Among those milestones are graduating from high school. Among those milestones, going to college, getting married, and then getting one's first home. And in my story, my wife and I, we did things a little bit backwards, or non-conventionally, I should say. We got married. I was 19 years old when I got married. She was 18. And we lived in our very first apartment together was a studio apartment. Back then, I think it was about $475, something like that. And from there, we moved to somebody's basement. We rented a basement in somebody else's home for a short time. And then from there, we got a one-bedroom apartment. All three of those first three homes of ours were in New Brighton. And after that, in 2000, late 99, we began looking for our first home. And it was in 2000, we finally closed on our first home in April of 2000. And back then, it was a three-bedroom, 1 3/4 bath, two-car garage tuck under on a third of an acre, $133,500. Back then, I was a truck driver making, and I can't remember exactly what it was at most $15 an hour. So I think that was at the end of my truck driving career. So a couple years before that, I was probably in the neighborhood of $13.50 an hour. My wife was also working, and we were able to afford. The interest rate back then, 8.29%. And so I forget how much we had put down, but I recall that the monthly payment without principal and interest was in the neighborhood of $900 a month. And so $900 a month, I was 20 years old at the time, buying that first house. It was an amazing accomplishment. We were so happy. Again, one of those milestones in life. Fast forward now, 24 years, here we are. Starter homes are north of $300,000, generally speaking. And it is very, very difficult for people to pursue their dreams. And that's why these conversations are so important, because I really feel for those people, those young people that, like myself, are 20 years old today, 24 years later, can't buy their first house on a $13.50 to $15 an hour job. And that's what we're trying to do here. And I fully recognize, Madam Chair, that Chair Port's spot on, that this is not a silver bullet, and this bill has some challenges with it as written. But that's why we're continuing to work on this. And we have to, you know, one of the things when we moved from New Brighton to our first home in the city of Dayton at the time, one of the things we were looking for deliberately was elbow room. We deliberately wanted space. And so among the varying definitions of happiness, it is a significant challenge to try to craft something at the state level to allow for that diversity of lifestyle choices. Some people want high density. Some people want to live within walking distance of everything that they want. And some people don't. And they're all very legitimate and right answers for the choices. And so, again, I very much and love this conversation and everybody's perspective on how we can accomplish something for those young people and anybody in life, whether they be a move-up buyer or an empty nester moving down, to accomplish their objective in maximizing their happiness. So with that, Madam Chair, I would like to offer the A4 amendment to the amendment.
Senator Lucero moves the A4 amendment. Is that in our packets? It should be in your packets, members. Do you want to speak to the amendment, Senator Lucero?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And what this amendment is seeking to do, it's HOA related. It clarifies that counties cannot require or incentivize HOAs or the inclusion of terms within an HOA. Currently, only cities and townships are covered under the current bill language. The amendment also makes clear that local governments cannot require HOA terms in any HOA governing document, not just limited to the bylaws and the articles of incorporation. So with that, I would encourage a green vote.
Senator Port.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Senator Lucero. I appreciate that you reached out to me before committee and we talked about this. I see this as a friendly amendment. Happy to take it on.
Any other questions or discussion, members? All right, seeing none, on the A4 amendment, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? All right, the motion passes. The amendment is adopted. Senator Lucero.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would also like to offer the A12 amendment to the amendment.
Senator Lucero offers the A12. Senator Lucero, to your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So in my time, I have done many renovations. I have pulled many different permits in different cities, permits of different types. One of the things that is very frustrating to me is the current permit price and the vast array of differences in how that permit cost is charged. So I'm just going to provide a couple of examples here. The reality is, and there are certainly exceptions to everything, and there's no perfect formula, but the reality is permit inspections, generally speaking, right now under current language, there isn't a connection between the cost and the effort involved in the inspection. One example is a deck. I've pulled many decking permits. And most cities charge the cost for that permit based on the value of the improvement to the property, the value of the deck. And in the decks, now granted, there's obviously varieties of decks, but generally speaking, there's 2 to 3 posts in a standard deck, and then there's the framing of that deck. Two inspections. And I've pulled decks, permits that $12,000, the cost, of, if my memory serves, was in the neighborhood of $425 for the cost of the permit. $425 for the inspector to come out twice, once to make sure that my footings broke the frost line, 42 inches, and the second trip out was the final to make sure that the railings didn't exceed 3 inches, of a sphere for the size generally of a baby's head, and other structural requirements of that. So two trips, over $400. There was no connection between the value of the deck and the amount of effort to achieve the inspections. When it comes to roofing, I've pulled roofing permits in cities where it was a flat fee, and I pulled roofing permits in cities where they charged based on the value of the work being performed. And generally speaking, re-roofing is one trip. It's the contractor or homeowner's responsibility to take a picture of the ice water to make sure that the 20, I think it's 24 inches within the interior wall has the ice water on it. And then provide those to the inspector when the final inspection occurs. And in all my experience, all the roofs that I've done, the inspector comes out, they stand on the ground, if they even come out, they stand on the ground, they look up to make sure there's no visible nail heads and a few other things. Maybe drip edge if applicable. And that's it. They're in and out 10 minutes. Maybe walk around the house. And so in the one city that I pulled, example, it was a flat fee. I think it was like $60. That makes sense. There at least is a relationship between the cost of the permit and the effort involved for the inspection. In another city, in another example I've done, it was based on the value, same, just coming out once, and it was north of $100. No relationship, no connection. So, Madam Chair, I appreciate the language you have in the bill, which is attempting to get away from the valuation. There is no connection between the value of a project and the amount of charge that it should be put on to the developer or homeowner or whoever's performing the work of the cost of the permit. So the language in the bill is changing that away to have it set and have some kind of relationship based on square footage of the project. That certainly is good, and there's with every solution, or every proposal, I should say, there are going to be negatives or drawbacks or vulnerabilities in that. And I see that moving from value to square footage is certainly better, but I'd like to move us in another direction, which is what I'm proposing here. I think it's even closer to have a connection of the effort involved by having the number of trips. So what this language would do is require municipalities to have a cost for the permit based on trip charge. And so it recognizes that the inspector for different types of projects, if they have to come out once, three times, five times, 10 times for whatever project is happening, there is a connection. So that's what I'm trying to accomplish here, because we absolutely need to reform what's being charged across the state for permits. So with that, I would just encourage a green vote.
Senator Port.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Senator Lucero. I think this is one of the parts of the bill that I'm not entirely sure we found the right piece. I think there is a question of whether inspector trips, though that then leads me down a path of, well, if it's not built right and the inspector has to come back two or three or four more times, like, that raises that question to me. I think you're right that there's not a really clear answer, but, and I also think there's a question about if it's cost per square foot, should that be set by the commissioner? Should that be regionally set? I imagine it's different in different parts of the state. And so this is something I'm very much still interested in getting more feedback on, and I haven't had conversations about this specific piece. So I would ask for a no vote today, but I am very interested in keeping working on this. And actually, Senator Housley, I think we want to loop you into this conversation because I think you might have some great insight on this.
Senator Lucero.
Okay, with that, I didn't know if Senator Housley wanted to say a few words. So with that, it is my intent to withdraw the amendment, but I wanted to put it out there because, yeah, I wanted to get language out there, something to look at, yeah. Something that can be added to the conversation, because I very much want to change the status quo. And if this can be useful in those contributions, I wanted to make that available. So thank you, Madam Chair. I withdraw the A12 amendment.
The A12 amendment is withdrawn. Senator Dreheim.
Thank you, Chair Bolden. Thank you, Senator Lucero, for that amendment. Inspection fees is something I've worked on very hard for many, many years, and I think we all can agree that we can improve what currently is taking place. There are some bad actors out there, and we've heard story after story of kind of different locations abusing the fee process. And I think it definitely has to be addressed. So I'm glad there's something in the bill here. I'm glad Senator Lucero has some thoughts on that. I'm going to call you Chair Port, if that's okay. Thank you for your bill, and thank you for getting your caucus more involved in housing. You know, we've had a lot of conversations. I've had a lot of conversations with your counterparts in your own caucus, more than I have in the previous 7 years. So I appreciate your efforts. I there's a lot of things in here I really like, and I understand what you're trying to get at, but I have heard from different groups, and as I'm sure you have, mm-hmm. on some tweaking that probably needs to be done. And more clarifications, and some of what I have are kind of the one-offs, And, you know, I think what happens in your district is totally different than what happens in Senator Lucero's, and Lucero's is totally different than my district. And we have to find a way to kind of weave all 87 districts into one statute. And I think we're making a step forward here, but I do think we're missing a few things, and a couple things that I think need to be really looked at. One is, I'm on 4.3, if anybody wants to look at the bill. When we talk about the height of a building, you know, in here, a lot of communities in my district are very small, and they literally would beg people to come and build. Literally beg. You know, I have one community, I think, has 137 sewer hookups. That's it. They would kill to have any type of development in town, and they will bend over backwards. But a lot of times, these smaller towns have a building that's quite tall in a commercial building that's usually ag-related, but everything else is no more than two stories. So I have a hard time with that section there in the rural area to go to the tallest building, tallest commercial or residential building within a quarter mile radius. So I don't think one size fits all there works. And then the next section B on 4.8, the setback requirements. And in my experience, there are some good setbacks that municipalities have put in. And not that I think they're always right, but if your intent is to go to the small lot sizes that you have in here, you know, I have run into incidences where you want to build and there's a bluff line. And different parts of the state, we have different soils. And I think there is good rationale from being farther away from a bluff line. And I don't think we consider that in the bill as drafted. So moving forward, I do think there are some exceptions on the setbacks. You know, my area, probably more so than your area, we have a lot of wetlands. We have a lot of lakes. And there are some setbacks that make sense. You know, my lake right now is down 2 feet. Someone came in and bought a lot right now and built on my lake and put it right close to the lake. Chances are they're going to have some water issues. So I do think we need to work through that a little bit more on the setbacks. And that's totally, you know, you have, I can do the math, you have the votes here in committee. We've worked well together. I appreciate that. On 5.3, and in this section, members, we're kind of doing the definitions of different types of housing. On 5.3 is owned in common, and I don't know, I'll ask our fine staff, which they love when I ask questions. Do we have a definition of that? Is that a CIC or a CIP? So moving forward, do we need to cross-reference a different statute for that? If your intent is to keep that in the bill. And then on 6.2, courtyard apartment. I don't have any courtyard apartments, I believe, in my district. But the last sentence, or the last two words or three words, yard or garden. So two or three sides with that. What is that defined? Is that a foot wide, the length of the building? Sure. And I don't know. Maybe it's not an issue. I don't know. But if we're going to create this, I think we should do it a favor to the people of Minnesota and have it defined a little bit, whatever our intentions are. you know, because in my district, green space is great. We love it. In Minneapolis, you know, every square inch matters probably a little more than in my district. And then when we define a lot here on duplex, fiveplex, fourplex, blah, 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 you know, the twin home is something that I had a bill on in the past that I know is in statute in a different section that I think needs to be added if this is the route you're going to go. So that was one of the first years that I was here. And I have a couple amendments that I'd like to get to, if that's okay, Senator Port, and so we can continue the discussion.
Yeah, Madam Chair, if I may.
Senator Port.
Senator Durham, I appreciate all of these. Definitely want to work to continue to get those definitions right. I think we've tried a couple different options with the height requirement. Our intent is certainly to have it be the actual buildings of the town, not a grain elevator, not a water tower. We played at potentially like naming those things as exclusions, but then we got down a rabbit hole of like, what are they called in different towns? Really happy to work with you on that. We want to make sure that what we actually mean is the buildings in the town that are used. So appreciate all that. Happy to continue working with you on it.
Senator Dreheim.
Thank you, Chair Bolden, and thank you, Senator Port. I have some amendments that might help you reach your goal there. So the first one, members, is the A5.
Senator Dreheim moves the A5. Is that in our packets? The A5 will be passed out.
And as long as you're passing out, they could pass out the A6 and the A8 too, please. That'd be wonderful, Chair.
Very good.
And as they're doing that, it's a pretty short amendment. On page 9, members, you can go to line 21. And we delete municipality and insert city of the first class. So kind of getting to what we were just discussing a little bit about the differences. And you know, I think the biggest problem we have is in the bigger cities. Like I said, I think I have 34 cities in my district, Chair. They're all begging for people to come and build in their cities. So I don't think most of them will work with different developers, builders to build anything on this list, for the most part, because they are looking for that workforce housing, that missing middle, if you will. So this helps us focus on the first class cities as defined, and if it works there, maybe we can expand it down the road. But I think our biggest problem is in those bigger cities, so I think we should focus on that first. And that's what my amendment to the A3 does.
Senator Port.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Senator Dreheim. You know, I think you're right in that there are different needs across the state, right? But as we toured across around the state last summer and toured some of these smaller towns, smaller communities throughout greater Minnesota, down south, we were in Windham and St. Peter and Kasson, and then we went up north and we're talking to folks around Roseau and Thief River Falls, really continued to hear from those communities the need for workforce housing, that was a really desperate need that they had, and they were essentially, as both you and Senator Lucero have alluded to, begging for developers to come into their communities. Like, we'll give you the land, we'll build the infrastructure, please just come and build. And that's a problem. Like, that's a continued problem that I think we need to continue to find new ways to help those cities incentivize builders to come to them. Why I guess I oppose the A5 at this time is because we wanna give You know, when we think about workforce housing, I think duplexes fall deeply right into that need, and fourplexes as well, or potentially up to fourplexes. And I do want to point out that one of the things that we removed in the bill through this process was the former subdivision 6, which required cities that were not of the first class to create a commercial unit, a commercial area that basically said, well, we don't have a major transit stop, but we have to designate this area of our community that has to allow up to 8-plexes potentially with various, and we removed that from the bill. So now in all of the cities that this amendment addresses, everything but cities of the first class, if they don't have a major transit stop, the only way they're getting more than duplexes is if they have an affordability requirement or they are all electric. And so I think, like, even in those cases, the most we're talking about in these communities is a fourplex. And I think we want to remove that barrier to allow those to be built. I'm happy to continue talking about it, but at this point, for those reasons, I would ask for a no vote.
Senator Lucero.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Madam Chair, Chair Port, and thank you, Senator Dreheim. So the language as written, it just physically isn't going to work, and that's why this amendment is important, and I'll just explain why. So if you look at, it's deleting on page 9, deleting lines 28 through 32, among the things that the amendment's doing. 28 through 32 is establishing a minimum lot size for cities of the second, third, and fourth class to be no greater than 4,000 square feet for single-family, duplex, triplex, fourplex, fiveplex, sixplex, stacked flat courtyard apartment. So in that list, let me just take a sixplex. So 4,000 square feet is 40 feet wide by 100 feet deep. To put a sixplex on there, oh, I should also add for context, out in our areas, significant portions of the city are still well and septic. We don't have city sewer water. Or city sewer water, I should say more clearly, at least in my area, is in very limited portions of the city or cities. And so to take a 40-foot wide by 100-foot lot, which would be 4,000 square feet, and to have enough space, let alone the footprint of any building, to have a well, and then 75 feet away to have your septic, and then on that same site, because every site needs to have a primary and an alternate septic site, so to have the well, and then 75 feet of space between the septic and the well, and then a secondary site for the septic, and then to have room for a sixplex, it physically isn't going to work. And so that's why this language, as written, absolutely needs to be modified, let alone any of the other variables that could be brought up in this scenario. So that's why I would encourage a green vote. But again, the amendment is more to highlight some of the things that do need to be addressed.
Senator Port.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Lucero. I agree that those are concerns that can come up, right? Those are things that need to be taken into consideration, septic and well, those sorts of things. What this does is says the city can't mandate a bigger lot size than that. It sets a baseline. There can be bigger lot sizes. They just can't say, oh, you want to build something with less than 3 acres? Well, now you have to have a variance, because we decided 3 acres is what we want. And it pushes these sorts of projects into requiring a variance, which then opens up a whole bunch of other ways to create barriers. I don't disagree that we need to find the right line for this. I'm just not comfortable with there not being a line. I'm happy to work with you all to find what that looks like and if it needs to look different in different size cities, things like that. I think that's something we can discuss. I'm not willing to remove the line for everything of cities of the first class at this point. But I take your point, and I think like that's a continued discussion we have. What I don't want is an easily put into place barrier to building this kind of housing to be automatically allowed by everything but cities of the first class.
Senator Drahan.
Thank you, and thank you, Senator Lucero, for your comments. And just so members know, when you put in a septic system, there's different types of septic systems, but the one that is pushed the most often is a mound system. And you've probably driven by or been to a relative's house that has a mound, you know, approximately 4 feet tall, and it kind of goes down like this. And then it also has some other drainage or tiles usually hooked up to it. And you need to have room for a new development for two of those. So, you know, I do think that it isn't practical. In all my years of experience, I have seen for a newer development, something that's been developed in the last 20 years, as low as 6,000 square feet per unit. And but more often you see 10,000 square feet than 6,000. So I can do the math. There's only two Republicans here. I will withdraw the A5, but hope to work with the chair, the author of the bill, to continue to work on it, because it doesn't work in rural Minnesota the way it's drafted. I agree that some cities have abused the lot size. But I do, septic or sewer hookup is something we have to be mindful of. So I will remove the or withdraw the A5.
Senator Drahan withdraws the A5 amendment. Senator
Madam
Drahan.
Chair.
Senator Port.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Drahan, I would like to figure this piece out. I'm very interested in figuring out if we can add an allowance for, you know, notwithstanding whatever needs to be required for septic and well systems, if we can work on that. I'd appreciate your help with that.
Senator Drahan.
I'm going to try again. So I have the A6 amendment to the A3 amendment.
Senator Drahan moves the A6 amendment. Senator Drahan.
Thank you. The A6 members deletes requirements for density or middle housing for cities of the second, third, and fourth class. So once again, we're going to focus on that first class to start with. You know, we've kind of been through some of the issues that we see. So on page 7, line 15, you know, we cut out municipality and put in cities of the first class, and then we delete subdivision 4 on the next page to kind of address some of the other issues. Very similar to what we just talked about.
Senator Port.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Senator Drahan. I apologize. This is the amendment I was looking at last time. I think the removal of the subdivision 6 that we looked at last time, that was on the bill when it originally came through, that required cities without a major transit stop to add in a zone where that really dense housing could be built, helps, I hope, to answer this question, and a lot of the feedback I've gotten was good on that, so that, you know, if you are in a community that does not have a major transit stop, the most you're looking at is 4 units. In most cases, you'd be looking at duplexes. And for that reason, and because I think we have a real shortage of workforce housing in greater Minnesota, that duplexes, triplexes, and fourplexes could be a really important tool to solve. I will ask for a no vote today on this, but happy to continue working.
Senator Drahan.
Thank you. And, you know, we have to adjust the square footage if we're going to continue on all these different things. But once again, I can do the math that 2 isn't a very large number. So I will withdraw the A6 and hope to continue to work with with you on that. And, you know, I will say that all my cities would love to build more property, and they will work with any developer that comes in to build anything that would fit on any parcel in town. So, but I will withdraw that. And then if I could, Chair, one last one.
Senator Dreheim withdraws the A6 amendment. Senator Dreheim.
I'm very confident in this one. Chair Bolden, on the A8, I'd like to offer the A8 to the A3 amendment.
Senator Dreheim offers the A8 amendment. Senator Dreheim.
Thank you, Chair. And Senator Port, this is comfort language on the parking. When I met with the chief author of the original bill, that was my number one concern. No matter what happens through the process, I know this has a couple more stops, or at least one more stop, and hopefully it'll come back here. Is that correct?
Thank you,
Senator Port.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Senator Dreheim. It will either come back here to be put in our omnibus bill or sent directly to the floor, depending on what leadership wants of and how many days we have left in the session.
Senator Dreheim.
Well, thank you, Chair, and thank you, Senator Port. I hope it comes back here, because I have a feeling that state government might have some changes with the language. Significant changes. But members, this has to do with parking and ADA and people with mobility issues. You know, I'm pretty passionate about that we don't forget that community and make sure that whatever we're doing, it's very ironic. The group chair that I had in my office right before this committee complained about parking up here. And asked how people do it with different issues. And we have to be mindful, if we're going to mandate to the whole state no parking, we already have a shortage of handicap spots, especially up here at the Capitol. So if you haven't put your 2 cents into the Capitol Commission on their redevelopment, I sent an email right away about parking, and especially the ADA. Expecting mothers. There's a whole bunch of different groups that should be included. But I think we need to be mindful as this bill moves forward that we add some language in. So I hope everyone will support the A8 amendment.
Senator Port.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Senator Dreheim. I appreciate you bringing this amendment. I think it's an absolutely necessary comfort language that makes a lot of sense. Happy to accept it.
Other questions or discussion on the A8 amendment? All right, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? All right, motion passes, and the A8 amendment is adopted. Senator Pa.
Thank you, Chair. I want to just first thank Senator Port for all the work that she has done on this bill and with all of us here in committee. And then I also want to thank all the stakeholders who have worked with all of us and on this bill, and who have also reached out to us throughout this process about this bill. Those who came out to testify, those who reached out because you had input or concerns, and those who reached out in support. Because all of you contributed to creating this bill that I believe is better now than it was in the beginning. So I know that we all have this goal of creating affordable housing, but also creating housing in Minnesota. So passing a zoning reform is necessary to build the diverse types of homes in every community in Minnesota that we need. And continuing to do this work, I look forward to talking with people and also working with this committee to make sure that we have a bill that can address those needs. I do have one question on here, and maybe more of a clarifying. If we can go to page, let me see here, page 6. similar to what Senator Draham had kind of mentioned about twin homes being on this list. I'm wondering on 6.13, when we talk about middle housing and the buildings are kind of included in there, if we may add ADU to this list as one of the options here. I know we reference ADUs in many of the other parts, but it was included in this list, so I wasn't sure if it's something we should add or not. I kind of would like to get input from that from Senator or Chair Port and also from Council.
Senator Port.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Senator Pott. I think because we fully legalize ADUs across the state, it wasn't put in this list, but I'm would be interested in if there is a reason to keep it separate or to add it in. I'm open to whichever is more clear, I guess. But yeah, I guess I consider them sort of both to be kinds of middle housing.
Ms. Painter?
Madam Chair and members, I'm not really sure, to be honest, why it's not in that list, but I will point out that in subdivision 2 on page 7 requires a municipality to authorize at least 6 types. So that would mean that that could be one of the 6 types. So it would reduce the rest of the list that a municipality would have to authorize.
Yeah, that was kind of something I did see too. Thank you. So I would like to, for us to consider as we build this bill out, that we add that on to there. Thank you.
Other questions or discussion, members? Senator Draham.
To that point, you know, what if the chair's okay with it, I mean, I think we could maybe have an oral amendment to add twin home and ADU to that. I'll call it 6.13 through 6.25, something in there. If this is the direction the chair is going, why not include all of the options? So I would like an oral amendment to add twin homes and auxiliary dwelling units to the list on page 6.
So Senator Draham is offering an oral amendment. I will ask staff to state the oral amendment for us when they are ready. While they are preparing that, Senator Port, any response?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Draham. I think I still would have a question, and perhaps council can answer that, but it might be something we have to look elsewhere for, of like what is the difference between a duplex and a twin home, like legally how that's defined. I am open to that consideration, as long as I'm not creating a problem that council warns me against. But I will say to the accessory dwelling unit, I am uncomfortable putting that in that list for now. It is defined earlier in on page 5.12, but putting it in that list of middle housing instead of legalizing both middle housing and ADUs, it would like eliminate one of the housing types that is sort of required to be legalized through this process, and I wouldn't want to strip that down.
Senator Draham.
So, members, I believe the twin home would be a side-by-side home with two parcels, where a duplex would be one parcel with two units in it, and a twin home would have two parcels, but they would be connected by a common wall, kind of like a townhome. But it's been a few years, but I believe that's what the definition is. It was a fire code bill that I had years ago. But so that's why I would say if we have it defined somewhere else, and that what's nice about a twin home is the square footage is a lot smaller for developing it. So I think it meets the purpose of what you're trying to accomplish here. So just, I would recommend we add a, probably a line 11 and, or number 11 and add Twin Home.
Senator Port.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Dreheim. Senator Dreheim, do you know if then townhouses is considered more than two?
Senator Dreheim.
I believe townhome is kind of a generic term for a common wall that can have more units. And I don't know if Paul has, he's shaking his head. Three or more.
I will note that on line 7.8, townhouse is defined as a single-family residential dwelling unit constructed in a group of three or more attached units.
Perfect.
Okay. Then I would say, Madam Chair and Senator Dreheim, that I would be okay adding twin home as number 11, but would then ask to split the amendment, I guess. And would not support adding ADUs to that list.
Senator Dreheim.
I would like to withdraw my oral amendment and add a new amendment that we do just twin home as the uses on page 6.
So Senator Dreheim is offering an oral amendment. When ready, I will ask Ms. Painter to state the amendment.
Madam Chair and members, the amendment would read, page 6, line 24, delete and. Page 6, line 25, delete period, insert a semicolon, insert and insert clause 11, twin homes, period. And I'll just point out, I don't have a definition for twin homes. If I was going to draft an amendment, I would add that. I don't know if you are able to repeat your definition. It would go after line 7.14.
And Madam Chair.
Senator Port.
And Ms. Painter and Senator Dreheim, I'm happy to work on that definition and sort of leave that as a work to be done for an author's amendment leading to state and local government.
Senator Dreheim.
I'm fine, or we could pass an amendment asking council to clarify when they type it up. But it was a fire code definition on sprinklers.
All right. Understanding more work will be done on the definition of twin homes. Any other discussion or questions on the oral amendment before us? Senator Lucero.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So my understanding, and I'm 99% sure I'm correct, twin homes are just as stated. It's on two PIDs with the property line running right down the middle through the property. But my question for council, as I'm looking at the definitions here of duplexes, triplexes, fourplexes, fiveplexes, sixplexes, each of them makes a reference and says when it's not a townhouse. So then I go to the definition of townhouse. It's my understanding that townhouses, the definition of townhouses also, each one is on it. They may be attached, but they're on their own PID. And so, but I don't see PID reference at all in townhouse. So my question is, in this list of duplex through sixplex, are all of these types in this section of the bill, in the definitions, are they all on a single PID?
Yes. Ms. Painter.
Madam Chair and Senator Lucero, I'm not sure, to be honest. I don't know. I'm sorry.
Okay, so then, Madam Chair, so the reason I think that's important is because if this list here of properties are all on a single PID, duplex, triplex, fourplex, fiveplex, and sixplex, we're now adding to it, just so the committee is aware, we're adding to that twin home, which I don't have a problem with, but that's a different type now because it's not on a single PID, it's on two PIDs. With the exception of, in this list, townhouse, which even though it's not spelled out in the definition, it should be on their, each unit is on its own PID. So just pointing that out for a clarification. Thank you.
Senator Port?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Lucero, I think yes.
Duly noted. Any other questions or discussion on the oral amendment, members? All right, Senator Dreheim.
Thank you. You know, I think it's important to have the definition correct because that affects financing. And the twin home, town home have separate parcels, so the individual can finance those. So I appreciate Senator Lucero bringing that up to the committee.
Very good. All right, members, on the Draheim oral amendment, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? The amendment, the motion passes, the amendment is adopted. Any other discussion or questions, members? Seeing none, I will take the opportunity to thank you, Chair Port, for this bill. This has been an excellent discussion today. I appreciate all of the comments from members. Certainly, this is needed. With a deficit of 100,000 units across the state, what we are currently doing is not working. That is very clear. And so we need many tools in the toolbox to get us to the place where everyone has a safe place to call home in an affordable way. And so I appreciate your comments around this not being the one thing that is going to fix every problem, but it is one thing that will help to move us in that direction to fix that problem. So thank you for bringing this bill. Would you, any closing comments on your bill?
I really appreciate the committee's time, not just today, but many hours over the weekend, over past weeks, Senator Draheim over many years, working on these proposals. I also want to thank staff for the incredible amount of work that went into turning this around for us to look at this weekend, to be able to have conversations about, and then getting another draft ready for us. So very grateful for all the staff work that has gone into this and all of the stakeholder work that has replied quickly when we've sent out drafts, when we've sent out amendments to be able to help us continue moving in this way. Our next stop is state government, but it is not the last that this bill will be worked on, and I look forward to continuing to work on it with everyone.
Senator Draheim.
Chair Bolden and Senator Port, the outlook for the committee hearing time the next week and a half, do you have any idea what your plans are?
Chair Port, I will defer to you on that question.
Thank you, Chair Bolden and Senator Draheim. Next, on Thursday, I am likely to be absent from the committee, presenting potentially four bills in other committees, including maybe this one. But we'll be hearing a bill from Senator Zhang and Senator Murphy on Thursday. I don't expect it to be a very long hearing because we lose Senator Bolden, who will be chairing at some point. To go present a bill in another committee. And then perhaps I can turn to Mr. Sokup to remind us what next week's calendar looks like, because frankly, I have not thought that far ahead.
Mr. Sokup.
Thank you, Chair Bolden. We will meet both Tuesday and Thursday next week. Thursday, we'll hear the policy omnibus, and Tuesday, we'll finish hearing individual bills on policy.
All right. Chair Port, would you like to make a motion that Senate File 1370, as amended, is recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on State and Local Government?
So moved.
All right, members, that is the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? Motion passes. Your bill is on your way. And members, with no further agenda items before us, Senator Draheim?
If you're going to, Chair Bolden, Chair Port, if you're going to bring out your policy bill on next Thursday, then, and if we don't get 3 days' notice per our temporary rules, are we going to have two hearings, one to go over the bill and one other day to have amendments?
Senator Port.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Draheim, I'm really hoping you're going to have 3 days' notice. I do not think there will be a lot of surprises in this bill.
Thank you.
All right, members, with no further business before us, this committee meeting is adjourned.